good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here on the program with the same name. Isn't that funny? My name's Mike Malloy, and I host the Mike Malloy Show every night.
Damn.
Jamie emailed in today, said, a 900-foot-tall Oral Roberts told me to listen to Malloy tonight and that it would be good. Jamie is very much a cynic. Somebody else wrote in and said, fire up the furnaces. Oral Roberts has stepped into the infinite. I don't even want to talk about it. Howard Dean and a couple other people have pretty much made the case today that it's time to just kill this health insurance reform idea. Just kill it. It's going to cost the Democrats probably the House and the Senate in the elections next fall. It's going to be a real cataclysmic event for the Democratic Party. And I think that's good. And I don't mean that to be unnecessarily cynical. But the Democrats had a perfect opportunity. They've had several over the past year and a half to assert not just their power, but the power of this Democratic Republic. And they chose to get along, go along, to be cowards, to deal with a piece of waste like Joe Lieberman, to the point where Lieberman now is able to almost single-handedly bring health reform in this country to a screeching halt. I don't care what Tom Harkin is saying on Rachel Maddow's program, even as we speak. But it is time to just punt. Drop back 10 yards and punt. You know, when it's fourth and long, what are you going to do? After a meeting, was it today, Obama came out and acted all brave, but you could tell by the hesitancy in his voice that he understands, too, that like Hillary Clinton, his chances of reforming the health care system, the health insurance system in this country is dead. It is completely dead. Now, there's a lot of postmortems already beginning, which may be a little bit premature, especially in light of the fact that tomorrow, Senator Bernie Sanders, the Democratic Socialist from Vermont, is going to introduce an amendment that is, well, for the first time in American history, it'll be a proposal to create a single-payer Medicare for all healthcare system. And there will be a debate on it. I don't think it's going to last very long. Sanders says, quote, in my view, the single-payer approach is the only way we will ever have a cost-effective, comprehensive healthcare system in this country, end quote. The Sanders amendment would provide healthcare and dental coverage for every American. It would save money. It would improve healthcare results. Everything is there. Everything is right there. So Sanders acknowledged today that his amendment will not pass. He said, quote, as a result of the power of the insurance and pharmaceutical industries, this amendment will not pass or even get very many votes. Nonetheless, given the view of millions of us that a single-payer approach is the only way this country will ever provide comprehensive, cost-effective health care to all its citizens, this is an important step forward. I can tell you what it says. I'll get to Lieberman in a second. There's a summary available at Bernie Sanders' website, but the summary is the amendment would establish a single-payer health insurance system that would cover every person legally residing in the United States. The single-payer system would be regulated and funded by the federal government through a payroll tax and an income tax, but it will be administered by the states. It would replace the coverage and revenue titles of the current bill, but it would leave in place most of the provisions in the quality, prevention, and workforce titles of the bill. The amendment starts from the premise that health care is a human right and that every citizen, rich or poor, should have access to health care, just as every citizen, rich or poor, has access to the fire department, the police, and the public schools. Why is the amendment important? The United States spends over $7,000 per person on health care, which is almost double the amount spent by nearly any other industrialized country. Despite this fact, we still do not insure all of our citizens. The United States ranks among the lowest of developed countries as far as health outcomes, according to both life expectancy and disease metrics. It goes on, but it starts from that premise that healthcare is a human right. It's not something to be administered by for-profit thugs who cheat and lie and steal from people and the government. The biggest scandals other than the banking industry have shown up in the healthcare industry. You're aware of that, the health insurance industry, I should say. That's where the biggest scandals are. Other than banking and finance, it's the enormous amounts of money that are used to administer Medicare, Medicaid, and healthcare, health insurance in general. The biggest scams, money scams, occur there. So, for the same reason that Willie Sutton robbed banks, that's where the money was. The health insurance industry and the pharmaceutical industry do not want their piggy bank smashed. And it will not be. So it raises the question, and Robert Perry, the investigative reporter who writes at consortiumnews.com, it raises the question, what the hell is motivating Joe Lieberman? Seriously. What, why is he doing this? Is it his ego? Is it his pettiness? Is it his wanting to be in the catbird seat? Is it his insatiable desire for publicity? What is it? Well, Perry says no one is mentioning the unmentionable, the cause that has come to define Lieberman's career, Israel. Israel? Perry says, is it possible that Lieberman's obstructionist behavior doesn't relate to Connecticut's insurance industry or to his political ego, which are the, you know, the two most cited explanations, but rather to a calculation that he can use his leverage on healthcare to limit the pressure that President Barack Obama can put on Israel to make concessions on a Mideast peace plan. And then and Perry raises the issue about Lieberman. I mentioned the other night that it's astonishing to me that Lieberman, who is the number one Zionist in the U.S. Senate, and he is, supports ardently, with his life probably, given that choice, a country that has single-payer universal health care, Israel. And yet Lieberman will do anything to stop it in this country. It just doesn't seem logical. I couldn't get my mind around it. Well, Barack Obama's approval rating in Israel is in the single digits. Because Obama, even though he is continuing to escalate war on Muslims, Obama is seen by the Likudniks in Israel, the hard right, which is most of the country, most of the political part of the country, as someone they can't trust. And the reason the Likudniks see Obama as someone they can't trust is because he actually addresses the Palestinian issue. He speaks to Arabs. He speaks to Muslims. Well, that's not allowed if you are a Likudnik, if you are part of the Benjamin Netanyahu crowd. You don't talk to Palestinians. Palestinians are subhuman. Palestinians are seen by the Israeli Jews in the same way that white supremacists in this country look at black folk. They're not human, not fully. Perry says the more common explanations of Lieberman's behavior have holes in their logic. While it's true that Lieberman's constituent Hartford-based insurance companies fear any government intrusion in their industry, the actual proposals for the Medicare buy-in or the tightly constrained public option actually would benefit the insurance industry in the near term. Perry raises some interesting questions here. We'll take a look at them when we come back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on a Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by January 4th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. Twenty-one past the hour. Call it the Lieberman explanation. Robert Perry, writing at consortiumnews.com, pretty much either has nailed it or at least raised a very interesting and salient point about Lieberman. As Perry points out, no one is mentioning the unmentionable, the cause that has come to define Lieberman's career, Israel. And Perry asks, is it possible Lieberman's obstructionist behavior doesn't relate to the insurance industry or his political ego, which those are the two reasons mostly cited as to why he's doing this, but rather to a calculation that he can so weaken Obama with this that Obama will have no political capital left to pressure Israel to make concessions on a Mideast peace plan? Perry goes on to say, the public option actually would benefit the health insurance industry that is so much of which is anchored in Connecticut. It would benefit them. So it's illogical for Lieberman to be so against a public option. It would benefit them certainly in the near term. And those are uninsured Americans 55 to 64. Those are customers that the insurance industry doesn't want, because they are part of the population that is most likely to need medical care, right? And that's the reason, as Perry points out, why private insurers have driven up the rates so high that these people can't afford to buy health insurance. Letting these people buy into Medicare wouldn't cost the health insurance industry much of anything, and it would reduce the moral crisis and PR crisis, really, that has led so many Americans to view private insurers as vultures, preying on the most vulnerable. So why would Lieberman be against the public option? In fact, as Perry points out, in his past position in favor of the Medicare buy-in, just 3 months ago, Lieberman was in favor of it. Lieberman recognized that reality about private insurers, vultures, as vultures preying on the most vulnerable. He noted that this over 55 age group faces a particular crisis because they have, quote, retired early or unfortunately been laid off early, end quote, Lieberman, and can't afford health insurance. And even though Lieberman has had his pockets lined with health insurance industry money, Perry says that has never before prevented him from favoring this Medicare buy-in. Only now does Joe Lieberman say he would join a Republican filibuster to kill the entire bill if this is included. So Senate Democratic leaders have dropped the buy-in provision to appease this son of a bitch. They've dropped it. It's gone. Now, in the same manner, as Perry points out, Lieberman has protested any inclusion of a government-run insurance option, right, the public option, even if it's only triggered by the failure of private insurers to offer affordable alternatives. The Congressional Budget Office has estimated that only about 6 million people would sign up for the House version of the public option, whose rates would likely exceed those of private plans because the sick would gravitate to the government plan. So this would give the insurance industry another break. So what's going on here? Why is Lieberman opposed to the Medicare buy-in and the public option if he is a pig, a shill for the insurance industry? It is illogical. It doesn't make any sense. So what's the deal? Perry says it's Israel. Israel. Perry says Lieberman may not be serving the industry's best interests by jeopardizing passage of a health reform bill. Not only does the industry stand to pick up tens of millions of new customers who will be forced to buy insurance, sometimes with government subsidies, but a decent reform bill also blunts demands for more radical change. So why is Lieberman doing this? The insurance industry will gain Nothing. In fact, if Lieberman succeeds here, then in fact, they will be put at greater financial risk. The insurance industry. The insurance industry should be calling Lieberman up and saying, "Get out of the way, dude. We want this, son of a bitch." That's why you've not heard the insurance industry really come out strongly against this. So for all these reasons, the Lieberman is in the pocket of the insurance lobby explanation isn't convincing. Which brings us to Israel, which, as Perry says, arguably has become Lieberman's most treasured priority in his political life. And I'll share with you what Perry said about that when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Introducing Liz, four fun-loving teens who love to hang out together.
Listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
25 before the hour. Back to Robert Perry's suggestion or insight or whatever you want to call it, that the reason Lieberman is so opposed to two aspects of the health insurance reform bill as put together by Democrats is the fact that they would weaken Obama if they are defeated. Public option and Medicare buy-in, both of which Lieberman in the past has supported, A. B, both of which the health insurance industry would like to see come into law because it would save them a lot of money. So why is Lieberman doing what he's doing? And the answer, to, as far as Robert Perry is concerned, at consortiumnews.com, is that Lieberman is the most ardent Zionist in the United States Senate, and this is a very direct attempt to weaken Obama. Because I think it's conventional wisdom that if nothing happens here with health insurance reform, and it appears nothing is going to happen, that that will make it easier for the Israelis to not respond to any pressure that Obama might want to apply to the Likudnik government of Benjamin Netanyahu. And again, remember that Obama's approval ratings in Israel are in the single digits. The Israelis don't like him because he has the unnerving habit. Well, first of all, there's his name, especially his middle name. And it's not Irish, his last name, Obama. Secondly, he talks to Muslims. He talks to Palestinians, to Arabs. And the Likudniks say, no, you do that and you are betraying the state of Israel. Perry says, Mark Vogel, or Perry writes, Mark Vogel, chairman of the pro-Israel National Action Committee, once said, quote, Joe Lieberman, without exception, no conditions, is the number one pro-Israel advocate and leader in Congress. There is nobody who does more on behalf of Israel than Joe Lieberman, end quote. As Perry points out, it was Lieberman's embrace of neocon ideology and his support for wars against Israel's Muslim enemies, the likes of Saddam Hussein, that led Connecticut Democrats to deny him the Senate nomination in 2006 and prompted his successful run as an independent from that state. Now, Perry says, partly because Obama opposed the Iraq War, Lieberman went on the stump for Republican John McCain in 2008, even questioning Obama's patriotism. Remember that? In August 2008, standing with McCain, Lieberman called the election a choice, quote, between one candidate, John McCain, who has always put the country first, worked across party lines to get things done, and one candidate who has not. Lieberman says Obama was a person who has not always put the United States first. Now, that is holy writ for politicians. You put the United States first, no matter how many children we incinerate, no matter how many wedding parties we blow into red mist, no matter how many countries we invade, illegally occupy or overthrow, the United States can do no wrong. Absolutely none. Well, Obama, according to Lieberman, has not always put this country first. Therefore, he is very suspect. He might be a communist. Where was he born anyway? Perry says, since the start of Obama's presidency, Israel's hawkish Likud government has made no secret of its concern that Obama might pressure the government of Israel into making territorial and other concessions to the Palestinians and Syria to secure a Mideast peace agreement. And in Washington, the still influential neocons, people like, you know, pick a few, they're still there. The most leading, the zombie, Dick Cheney, they've also been demanding that Obama continue Bush's belligerent policies and side with Israel in a hardline approach to Iran, right? Remember, the neocons want war. They want blood, as long as it's somebody else's blood, and their precious bodies, their precious sons and daughters and wives and husbands don't have to participate. Send the country's minorities over to fight. You know, the Latinos and the other brown people have got to have something to do with their time. Send them over there so they're not robbing convenience stores. Isn't that the attitude? So, in the sense that the neocons are demanding Obama continue the Bush policy, siding with Israel no matter what, Lieberman, Perry writes, and the neocons have much in common with Republicans like Jim DeMint, Republican of South Carolina, who declared in July that, quote, if we're able to stop Obama on this health reform, it will be his Waterloo. It will break him, end quote. And as Perry points out, a broken Obama would be a lot easier to manipulate regarding Mideast peace talks and Iran, right? If Lieberman succeeds, Perry writes, in sinking Obama's chief domestic priority, health insurance reform, or if Lieberman succeeds in getting it watered down so much that it alienates Obama from his liberal base, Obama may find himself essentially the captive of the neocons, needing their blessing to maintain any political viability in Washington as he tries to continue his presidency. Starting to make sense to you, truth seeker? Perry finishes up by saying Lieberman has been careful not to connect his disruptive behavior on health care reform to his support for Israel. But there can be little doubt that a chastened Obama, either defeated on health care or forced to sign a bill that liberals will view as a betrayal, a chastened Obama will have much less political capital to expend in applying pressure to Israel. A hobbled Obama, Perry writes, won't be able to push Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to halt expansion of West Bank settlements, or to take other steps that might lead to a Palestinian state. Obama also could be pushed around himself if Israel, which is an undeclared nuclear power, if Israel decides to launch airstrikes against Iran's nuclear facilities. The Israel explanation, Perry concludes, for Lieberman's behavior on health care reform is the one that seems to make the most sense. Well, for those of us outside the Beltway, outside the Washington chicanery and backstabbing and intrigue. For those of us outside that nest of vipers, considering what Perry suggests here, has been beyond our reach. I know a couple of you have suggested this, but I think in more of a glancing way, an offhand way, kind of an oblique way. Maybe it has to do. Even I mentioned it the other night about, hey, you know, I don't get it. You know, only I didn't make the connection. I just said, all I said, I'm not trying to put myself in the same class as Robert Perry, but I just, you know, I said the other night, what is it with Lieberman? Everybody knows he's an ardent Zionist. He's one of the biggest supporters, if not the biggest. Of Israel in the U.S. Senate. He's an Orthodox Jew. He believes what he believes. That's his business. But you know how the application of pressure by the Jewish lobby in this country, the Israeli lobby, I should say, against American politicians is unrelenting. And Obama is seen as an absolute threat to Israel. Expanding its territories, refusing to, or its settlements in the territories, refusing to work out a peace agreement, with the subhuman Palestinians, which is how they are seen. Obama is not seen with any favor whatsoever. Bush's ratings in Israel, I think, were in the high 80s. No matter what he did. Obama's hasn't even, at this point, they're below 10% approval. And the 8 or 9% of Israeli citizens who support Obama, are, for the most part, I would assume, people in the peace community in that country who understand the necessity of a two-state solution that is fair and equitable. Although neither side would see such a thing ever as fair and equitable. That's why there is no solution to the Israeli-Palestinian issue. So there you have it. I find what Perry writes to be eminently considerable. You know, it bears consideration. And as Perry points out, you know, when you get into this area of discussing the overt influence of the Israeli lobby on members of the U.S. Congress, or the actions taken by members of the U.S. Congress in support of Israel at the expense of their own country. When you bring that up, you're immediately, I'm waiting for the emails to roll in. Malloy, you anti-Semitic son of a bitch. May all your children rot in hell. I'm waiting. We'll be back.
Soothing bedtime lullaby.
Or something like that. Who knows? 10 before the hour. As we mentioned earlier, Greg Sargent, writing at the Plum Line, points out that Howard Dean has bluntly called for the so-called health insurance reform bill, the Senate bill anyway, to be killed. Dean also denounced it as, quote, the collapse of health care reform in the United States Senate, end quote. So it really is kind of a sad situation. When you take a look at Obama's lack of courage in this, and I can see it no other way, He didn't grab this issue around the throat and threaten to strangle it unless people woke up and figured out a way to really, truly reform health care, health insurance in this country. And that would have required a single-payer system. It was just too much. Obama just was not the man to do it. You know, that was never his intention. Just like Nancy Pelosi, it was never her intention to go after the criminals in the Bush crime family. So to a lot of liberals and progressives, and we talked about this the other night through somebody else's blog or an email or whatever it was, that, you know, for the people who think that Obama is a liberal or a progressive, you're out of your minds. And I, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, I was tricked and fooled. No, I wasn't. You know, I said this before. If you're a regular listener to this program, you know that my point of view before the election was very clear. That Obama was another corporate candidate. I said that night after night after night. And Hillary too. And some of the emails I got from people were blistering. People abandoned the program, told me to go F myself, told me they would never listen again because I was a traitor to the Democratic Party. I was a traitor. The one that really got to me, I was a traitor to African Americans. I was trying to stand in the way. You know, that kind of stuff. And all I was doing was reciting almost verbatim Barack Obama's scant legislative history in both the United States Senate and in the Illinois legislature. That's all. And Hillary's, same thing. Trying to make the point that these were not liberals, neither one of them. They were not progressives, neither one of them. Not to paint Hillary Clinton with the brush of her husband, but the Clinton administration was one of the most regressive Democratic administrations in the history of the Democratic Party. I mean, that son of a bitch allowed the Republicans to undo 70 or 80 years of social progress in this country. And as a result of Clinton signing off on the ending of the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933, whatever it was, we are now faced with what we're faced with economically. So my point back then was simply that Obama was not a liberal or progressive, but I said at the time, quoting Margaret Thatcher when she said about Gorbachev, you know, he's a communist we can do business with, Thatcher said. I kind of parroted that and said, well, it looks like Obama is a Democrat that, you know, progressives and liberals can do business with. And I gave a lot of airtime to people who insisted, well, we got to get him elected, Mike, and hold his feet to the fire. Hello, where's the fire? Where's the feet? So it's not that Obama was necessarily thwarted in his attempt to fashion health insurance reform, meaningful health insurance reform in this country. That's not necessarily the result of this at all. He wasn't trying to fashion meaningful health insurance reform at all. If he wanted to do that, if he wanted to be a radical progressive, all he had to do was say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's the plan. It's called single payer. You all know what it is. That's A. B, his cowardice, he called it not wanting to repeat Hillary Clinton's mistake of working out all the terms of everything behind closed doors as she and Ira Magaziner and all those people way back in 92 and 93 until they finally presented it to the Congress, the American public. By that time, media and right-wingers had broken it into a million pieces and it died. And the stench from that is still noticeable if you stick your head out the window and take a deep inhale. Obama said, no, that's not going to happen to me. This is all going to be open up front. I'm going to have the legislative branch do it. Well, okay. But why didn't Obama, see, here we are in the postmortem, why didn't he set out the parameters and say to his political party that control the House and the Senate, this is what it must contain, period. Don't present anything that doesn't have this. Single payer. And with all those points that Bernie Sanders now is going to introduce in a resolution or an amendment tomorrow to make single payer the rule of the law of the land here. And as Sanders said, it's never going to happen. But Sanders is not the president of the United States. Barack Obama happens to be. But Obama did not want to do that. He didn't want to say, I will lead this thing through the House and the Senate. Well, the House and the Senate will make the decisions. as to the gears and levers, and how it operates around the fringes, I, the President of the United States, am insisting, I demand, that after all these years we join the rest of the industrialized world and have single-payer health care to stop this the corruption, to save the U.S. Treasury billions, and to make sure, third and lastly, make sure that all Americans have access to health care. He did not do that. So this plan, Lieberman be damned, and all these intrigues, U.S.-Israel intrigues be damned, this thing needs to be killed. Barack Obama is going to be a one-term president. You know it as well as I do. And you also know what's going to happen in November 2010. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
When did your life start?
Sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on a Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by January 4th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. Past the hour. Well, with that latest news, it kind of demolishes this story from Talking Points memo. Healthcare reform in peril. Lieberman threatens filibuster over Medicare buy-in. All right, we can trash that one. Joe Connison, this is from a month ago. Joe Lieberman undercuts his wife. This stuff has been out there. Joe Connison writes, Hadassah Lieberman has long billed herself as an advocate for women's health, even when her corporate career scarcely justified that description, because of her work as a lobbyist, I think. Hadassah and the insurance pharmaceutical lobbying complex that employed her for decades. That's right. So anyway, in her current position as a so-called global ambassador at Susan G. Komen for the Cure, the world's biggest breast cancer charity, the senator's wife is indeed serving a worthy cause. According to Komen official, her role as a global ambassador includes speaking engagements, networking in the public and private sectors, direct engagement in the areas where we work, as well as supporting the efforts of the organization's Global Promise Fund, which raises money to support Komen's efforts around the world. Last summer, she co-hosted a fundraising lunch at the Republican National Convention that raised eyebrows. The same spokesperson indicated that Hadassah Lieberman is not an employee of Komen, meaning that she isn't paid, although her husband's 2008 Senate financial disclosure shows that she received more than $1,000 from Susan G. Komen for the cure. But whatever Hadassah actually does for Komen, the question that women might ask is whether she brings its important messages home to Joe. Has she explained, for instance, that thousands of uninsured and underinsured women die every year because so many don't get timely preventive care for treatment for their cancers? Has she pointed out to him that healthcare reform is of special importance to women, cancer patients, and cancer survivors? Did she tell her husband why her organization is demanding the same health insurance reforms that he and his Republican allies are determined to prevent? It's just unbelievable. So Joe Constant had this information out at Salon.com back in November. There's a petition to get Hadassah Lieberman off of being whatever the hell she is with Susan G. Komen. What a farce. I mean, it's just awful. Justine in Maryland writes, Mike, even previously staunch supporters of not only a so-called robust public option, but universal single-payer healthcare like Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown are caving in. Watching him on tonight's countdown was painful, to say the least. I am so sick of that BS line about the perfect and the enemy of the good. What the F does that even mean? These folks are the enemy of the good and friend of the bad, ugly, evil, and the pieces of human waste running all corporations in this country. Who's that piece of crap being given $100,000 per hour? Helmsley, the head of Hospital Corporation of America. Justine in Maryland. Josh writes, Mr. Malloy, I'm as mortified by Lieberman's actions as you are. I think what is happening is that about 8 spineless conservadems have been long since bought and paid for by big health and pharma and are causing the Congress to play whack-a-mole. Every time any sort of agreement is reached, one of these monsters stands up and swears to block the reform. It is my feeling that they will do this, take turns blocking reform until the midterms, when their true Republican allegiance will take back just enough seats to kill the whole thing. Josh in California. And Irish Dave. Mike, I think you're mistaken about Lieberman. Israel is hell for him. Remember, I said the Jews don't have a hell. Israel is hell for Joe Lieberman since they have single-payer health care. Yeah, is there a bigger supporter of the state of Israel? Is there a bigger Zionist in the, and I just mean that in its literal term. Look it up for Christ's sake. Just because someone's a Zionist, I'm not saying they are evil son of a bitch. Joe Lieberman is a Zionist. If he is, if he is an absolute advocate of the state of Israel and their single-payer health care, then why is he ripping to pieces America's only chance to get even close to it?
radio right from the left. It's More Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Got a letter here from Mike in Connecticut. Subject line, Lieberman and my wife. He writes, hi, Mike. On Friday, my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. We are both self-employed and basically can only afford disaster insurance with a high deductible. The insurance company will only pay for the initial mammogram. The other tests are out-of-pocket expenses for us. It's basically going to cost us $6,000 before the end of this year. And starting in 2010, the deductible goes up to $10,000. So basically, we're going to have to pay $16,000 before we have any coverage. And that is on top of our $670 monthly payment. So how can anyone support such a cruel system? It's like having Tony Soprano standing between us and our doctors. Shame on Lieberman. Mike from Connecticut. I'm sorry, Mike. You know, I actually bought into the idea that the Democrats, starting with Barack Obama, were going to get serious about health reform. They had all the votes they needed. What is this 60-vote horse crap? They need 51 votes. I thought the Democrats were going to do it. I had no idea that every single member of the House and the Senate, every single member, with maybe one or two exceptions, is owned outright by pick a corporation. Now, I've been talking about that for a long time. You know, the corporatist state, we're sliding into it. Here it comes. Watch out. Run for cover. Ooh. Here it comes. Here it comes. Is there a more clear example of how the legislative branch of the U.S. government is owned outright now? Owned outright by corporate America. Is Obama owned outright? Probably not quite. He can still do a couple of things on his own. He can make the initiative, but it just goes nowhere. It's much more difficult, I think, to buy a president than it is to buy a Congress. For one reason, the president is more visible. These rat bastards in the House and the Senate can worm around like the vermin that they are and put holds where nobody knows where the hold is coming from. They can stop this. They can stop that. These slimy bastards. Look, Truth Seeker, you might as well give it up if you really do believe that anything's going to change until, if it's possible, a couple of things happen. First of all, corporate money has gotten out of elections. Or secondly, that the Democratic Party is ended. Republican Party will always be there because there is something evil in. I don't believe in intrinsic evil, but I do believe that let's just call it stupid. There's something deeply stupid inside human beings that makes them follow crazy people like Jim Jones or Adolf Hitler or Glenn Beck. And as long as that kind of idiocy exists inside a plurality of people, if not a majority, then there's no way. Do you not understand this? Do you not get this? I mean, I'm not trying to come across like somebody with the big searchlight discovering all these truths. You know, I've been wandering around trying to find truth myself, but I'll tell you what, in the past 9 months, ever since Barack Obama took over the presidency, I have had my eyelids ripped off my skull to the point where do I see? I can't stop seeing. And don't send me an email and say, well, I told you, Mike. You know, to hell with you. I don't care who you are or what you tried to tell me. Everybody walks their own path, wise guys. So if you came to enlightenment long before I did, pat yourself on the back and don't send me an email. My little journey has taken me a long goddamn time. It really has. So spare me the, oh, well, it's time you woke up, Mike, horse crap. But if there's anybody out there who believes that the Democratic Party will ever do anything, anything, ever again for the working class or the middle class or for reform or for progressive politics or liberalism, get over it. It's never going to happen. So what's to do? Give up? Hell no. It's time to start working from a different direction. Get the hell out of this filthy Democratic Party. Are you kidding yourself? I did for a long time. Oh, come on, I'm going to hold his feet to the fire. Well, let's give it a shot. Well, one more. Well, what's the alternative? What's the alternative? Do you think the Republicans could have done this any worse? Where it concerns health care? Do you? Health insurance reform? Do you? Come on. So what's the answer? I mean, you, my Democratic friend, can continue to delude yourself. Go right ahead. That's, you know, I just said, everybody walks their own path. Do whatever you need to do. Me, I'm off that path completely. The Democratic Party path. Never, never again. I take a blood oath. I will never vote Democratic again. I don't care if it's for a goddamn town councilman out here in the boondocks someplace. Never. If there's not a candidate that is a Democratic Socialist or a Green or a something, then I'm not voting. I've had enough. I've had enough. I am tired of putting the noose around my own neck and saying, well, maybe this time. Well, maybe this time. Well, maybe this time. No, that's it. You want to support this corrupt system? You go ahead. You continue to do it. And besides, a lot of us don't have that much time left to play this miserable, filthy game anyway. This political crap. You know, at some point you just say, ah, to hell with it. And you really retire. You really check out. You really say, okay, time to move up to the North Georgia mountains and read and write and, you know, play with the grandkids and to hell with all this mess. And, you know, then just wait for the great oblivion. But there are an awful lot of people out there who are a lot younger, who are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. Let me just tell you now, for someone who's been around a hell of a lot longer than you have, if you continue to vote Democratic Party candidates, you are continuing to hang yourself. Forget the Republicans are just fascists, period. They want to kill everything that this country ever stood for. Every single Republican is that way. But they're blatant about it. They're just wide open about it. They'll just tell you, I'm going to kill you. But Democrats, these lying bastard Democrats, I'll tell you, my advice to young people, and there's only one thing less valuable than unasked for advice, and you know what that is. But you want some unasked for advice? Get out of the Democratic Party. Get active and start a third party. I don't care what you call it. Call it the checkerboard party. I don't give a damn. But do something to work for progressive goals, progressive ideas. It's up to you people. It's up to you people in your 20s, 30s, and 40s. The rest of us are too goddamn old and too tired. So, I just can't believe this. I can't believe this. And according to Jane again, Jane Hampshire over at FireDogLake.com, she's writes today, it's quite convenient that what Joe Lieberman is demanding, no public option, no Medicare buy-in, happens to look just like the Senate Finance Committee bill that the Obama administration wrote with Baucus. Now the Obama administration is saying Reid should take the deal. The White House is encouraging, that would be Obama or Rahm Emanuel. I hate this, the White House. It's a goddamn building, Jane. Stop putting it that way. The goddamn White House building doesn't talk. It's a building. Obama is encouraging Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid to cut a deal with Lieberman and eliminate the proposed Medicare expansion and health reform bill, according to an official close to negotiations. But Reid is described as so frustrated with Lieberman that he's not ready to sacrifice a key element of the health care bill. And first wants to see the Congressional Budget Office cost analysis of the Medicare buy-in. The This particular official said, quote, there's a weariness and a lot of frustration that one person is holding up the will of 59 others. There is still too much anger and confusion at one particular senator's reversal. One person is holding up the will of 59 others. What are you talking about? There's 150 million people out here who want this. So Lieberman, why do they coddle Lieberman? Because he has a full support of AIPAC? I would imagine that's one of the reasons. How does Lieberman, I'll ask this question again, I don't expect an answer. How does Lieberman support the state of Israel so thoroughly? I mean, Joe would move there if it weren't for the fact that some Palestinian would probably take a shot at him. But how does Lieberman support so ardently the state of Israel that has a single-payer health plan? Why does Lieberman so ardently work to get more money from U.S. taxpayers for the state of Israel? And this miserable son of a bitch will plop himself down in the middle of the Senate and say, no, it ain't going to happen.
Liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
It's a Pink Floyd night for sure. Chris Bowers, writing at openleft.com, points out the whole ludicrousness of this. The Democrats are the ones who put Holy Joe Lieberman in the position he's in. Bowers writes, nothing Lieberman is doing would be possible without the ongoing support of the majority of the Democratic caucus. If Democratic senators wanted to punish Lieberman for his consistent transgressions against the party, they could. If Democrats wanted to reconciliation and just circumvent him altogether, they could do that too. But they're not going to do either. As such, Lieberman is simply taking the power that's being handed to him by the rest of the caucus. Since he knows that Senate Democrats won't ever punish him and won't ever circumvent him, he now has free rein to dictate whatever legislation he wants, get tons of face time with the White House and the Senate leadership, regularly be the top story on news outlets around the country, receive millions in campaign contributions, and appease his Republican base. At this point, most of Lieberman's supporters are Republicans. It is a great deal for Lieberman, and it would not be possible without the ongoing consent of the majority of the Democratic Senate caucus. Since we already defeated Lieberman in a Democratic primary, there is clearly nothing more as progressive activists to threaten Lieberman. There is nothing more as progressive. That sentence doesn't make any sense. What we need to start doing is taking action against the Democrats who enable Lieberman and his ilk. If other Senate Democrats are not going to do anything about Lieberman taking control of the entire caucus, then really, what's the difference between those other senators and Joe Lieberman? Never thought I would echo George W. Bush, but we have reached the point where it is time to stop differentiating between problematic senators like Joe Lieberman and the other Senate Democrats who enable him. Yeah, I agree. That's why I'm saying, I swear, like I say, it's an oath to me. Not that you care, and I don't care that you don't care. I really don't. But they will be giving drinks of ice water in hell the next time I vote Democratic for anything. I've had enough. I have had way, way too much. Coming up next hour, we are going to have a Uncle Mike Story Corner, and it's a quick one. I like that. I like quick Uncle Mike Story Corners. I'm sorry, I come out of television news way back when and, you know, just learned how to write or do stuff quickly. I don't expect anybody to pay that much attention to this program anyway, but if I do trick you into listening for a while, I figure I can keep you listening if I keep things brief, short, and quick. Is that redundant? Having spent 2 hours on Lieberman, I do feel a little bit guilty. I just despise this man more than I can ever say. When Gore had Lieberman forced on him for the vice presidential pick, and Gore had nothing to do with it, trust me. When Lieberman was forced on him, it was like, oh my God. And then to watch the election be stolen. Added insult to injury, or injury to insult, I guess is a more correct way to say it. I wonder, when Lieberman makes his frequent trips to Israel, and don't send me an email say I'm being anti-Semitic, you know, I get so, I'm so immune to that. When Lieberman makes his trips to Israel, if he gets sick over there, if his hemorrhoids flare up or Hadassah gives him some kind of I've got an attack in my liver, you know, and he has to go to the doctor in Israel and it's all single payer, so he doesn't pay anything. Then what does he do? Does he go in front of the Knesset and say, you gotta stop this. This is crazy. What are you giving free here? Medicine care? What? Is that what Lieberman does? Or does he just sit there and go, Hadassah, this is really nice, huh? How about this, huh? How about this? I'll be damned. Can't wait to get back to the United States and tell him no. I mean, how hypocritical, never mind. If you want to talk when we come back after this break, we're going to do an Uncle Mike Story Corner at the bottom of the hour, but up to that point and subsequent to that, we'd like to hear from you. The phone number is 877-996-2556. So Kathy's going to get the wheels in motion for this break, and then she will take your phone call. 877-996-2556. Go ahead, start the music. What, you can't start the music? Why not? Okay. Then I'll start the music. Do, 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 do. Oh, there's the music. Oh, that part's automated. Okay. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. I don't know. I guess y'all are getting tired of me talking about Holy Joe Lieberman. I'm just blown away by this guy. I mean, I really am. You talk about somebody who, you know, he was thrown out of the party. Why did the Democrats give him any power at all? So what is happening here, Joe, being the leechy son of a bitch that he is, he's doing what all bloodsuckers do. He's just returning to haunt them. Why didn't the Democrats in the Senate, when Lieberman snuck in through the back door, why didn't they just say to him, "Oh, hi, you remember the Independent Party? Oh, okay. Well, go check with your party leader here in the Senate for your assignments once the Independent Party becomes a majority party. In the meantime, Joe, sit down and shut the hell up." But they didn't do that, did they? Because they figure, okay, we got Lieberman back, huh? Ned Lamont almost knocked him off, but we got Lieberman back. All right, well, let's suck up to him a little bit. Joe is a vindictive son of a bitch, and he knows that the Democrats can't do anything without him, because they're cowards and refuse to do anything unless they have 80 votes. If they have 80 votes, then they'd be a powerhouse. No, probably the 20 Republicans would still ruin the bastards. I don't get this Democratic Party. Oh, well. All right, let's chat here a little bit. Marge is in Maryville, Indiana. Hi, Marge.
How you doing, old buddy?
Well, I've been talking about Lieberman for the past 2 hours, so I'm not in very good shape.
Well, that would be enough to rot anybody's socks. I mean, that guy...
Yeah, it would.
Yeah. Where do you start with that guy?
In hell?
God. You know, the thing that kind of galled me, you know, he's so sanctimonious that he walked on the Sabbath in a black wool coat to cast his ballot.
Oh, yeah?
That's what I read in the paper someplace. Doesn't that...
I would imagine he's probably a hypocrite about his religion. He's a hypocrite about his country. He's a hypocrite about his party. He's a hypocrite about health care reform. It was 3-4 months ago he was talking about how in favor of Medicare for people 55 and up he was. He's a slimy bastard.
Yesterday he said he didn't know what was in it, but he just couldn't. So there's how did he put it? What was the word he used? There's such a buildup against it. And you know, nobody bothered to ask him. Bob Schieffer didn't bother to ask him. You know, who's against it? You mean the insurance companies in your state, the insurance companies and the pharma around the country? Are they the people that are against it?
I know. It's just I cannot believe how the Democratic Party was so willing to make itself hostage to a piece of human waste like Lieberman. That's the part I don't get.
And now what is there? 20 senators are supposed to be for the Dorgan Amendment, and they can't get anybody, you know, to stand up and say, well, you know, let's get this done. You're familiar with that?
I'm not even sure what the Dorgan Amendment is.
Well, I think that's a guy's name. I don't know where he's from. There's a Senator Dorgan, is there not?
Yeah.
Okay. There's 20 of them I heard today that want to add to the health care bill that it would be permissible to buy drugs from Canada, mostly, other countries, at a much lower rate, which would save the Americans money. Now there's a concept. But, and this what blows my mind, supposedly somebody from the FDA said, no, we can't do that for safety reasons. What the hell are you talking about?
Safety reasons? What, the Canadians are going to poison us?
Yeah, right. Well, they're already poisoning all their people, you see. So now they're going to come over here, and if we pass this amendment, they're going to poison us, too.
Is that it?
You know, I don't know whether you noticed it or not, but lately, in the last couple of weeks, all these, you know, fields of a grain and this quiet, calm voice talking about, you know, how great the insurance companies are, and the American farmer, and the ads paid for by Monsanto. And I, give me a damn bloody break. I mean, hypocrites, liars, spinners.
Cheats, snakes.
I know the only words I can say on the air.
Yeah, I know. I have the same problem.
Brother, I do come
out. Well, like I said, Mars, I've been talking about this creep head for the past couple hours, but anyway.
You got some Jack Black handy when you go home?
I am home.
let me just leave off the last.
No, I can't. No, I can't drink. I can't drink whiskey this late at night. Occasionally, I'll have a glass of wine after the program.
Have you ever tried dry sack? Sherry?
I hate the taste of sherry. I really do. I mean, and besides, you know, that's you know, I'm a man.
Oh, excuse me, all hell.
I don't drink sherry.
Oh,
I used to date someone named Sherry. I damn sure don't drink it.
I gotta share one thing with you. Not
sure.
Sherry, but share.
Yeah, go ahead.
I had a very delightful hour this evening earlier. Channel 11 had the performance by a group called Straight No Chaser.
Uh-huh.
It's a all-men's a cappella group from Indiana University.
Mm-hmm.
And they are good.
Uh-huh.
They have been on YouTube. Straight No Chaser.
Mm-hmm.
And they did, on YouTube, they did the 12 Days of Christmas. They've got other carols, Carol of Bells.
Oh, yeah. I've seen these people.
They're good.
Yeah.
I like them. I mean, I was an a cappella when I was in high school.
Straight No Chaser is, and they've got something on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, anyhow, well, yeah. You all set for your Christmas holidays?
The winter solstice holiday for me.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah. Yeah.
What, you got your stocking hung up by the chimney with care and hope that St. Nicholas soon would be there?
Well, not really, but close enough.
Not even for a lump of coal?
A reasonable facsimile thereof.
Oh, okay. Very good. Very good.
And thanks for the Christmas card.
Well, thank you, too.
Oh, did
you? Molly is such a cutie pie.
Oh, you got the picture of Molly?
Yeah.
Isn't she something?
Yeah.
She's 5 and a half now.
Holy smokes.
All right.
Time goes by. Do you realize that a week ago today, it's been 4 years since the surgeon took a scalpel and a Roto-Rooter to my carotid?
Oh, that's right. And we didn't hear from you for a while. And we were getting ready to draw on our old our Catholic friends' rituals and go burn a candle for you and hope you made it into heaven.
Well, I tell you, you and my fellow truth seekers came through like troopers,
yeah.
And I still have the basket full of cards. I go through them and read them. It really touched me. It really, truly did. And
yeah.
I don't think I'll ever forget that. But that was also the day that I quit smoking. So thank you for that.
Well, you're more than welcome, Marge. All right, so, sweetheart, let me put you on hold, all right?
Take care.
All right, you too. Marge in Merville, Indiana. All right, we're taking a break here. When we come back, your phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on a Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by January 4th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. It's about 22 past the hour. When we come back after the next break, we're going to do a quick Uncle Mike story corner. But it's a good one. I want you to hear it. Richard is in Dickinson, North Dakota. Hey, Richard.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Hey, send me some global warming. It's like 15 below here.
Don't confuse climate with weather. Okay, what's up?
Okay, I just want to ask, do you think that any bill that Congress passes on the health care thing, that they should live by that plan too?
I would think that would be fair. You know, we got rid of kings and princes and that sort of thing. Well, I guess maybe we didn't. We got rid of the title king or duke or prince, but we still have people who live that way. But yeah, I think Congress should have the same sorts of perks or no perks that we common folk are can take advantage of too.
That's exactly right. I mean, why shouldn't they have to? I'm 100% disabled veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Congress should live by, you know, the rules that they set for others.
Hey, what do you think of that vote? I don't know if you know about it. We talked about earlier that vote last Thursday where every single Republican in the House and 28 Democrats in the House voted against funding the Veterans Affairs Department. Now it still passed because enough Democrats pulled this funding through, but every single Republican voted no.
I'm not familiar with it, so I can't comment on it.
All right, well, comment on it because I just told it to you, and I don't lie. What do you think?
Well, I understand, but
you understand it.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I don't know the particulars.
Well, let me try it again because I'm going to ask you, Richard, to give me a straight up answer. You said you're a totally disabled vet, so I have a question for you. What do you think of the fact that last Thursday a vote was held in the House to fund the Veterans Affairs Department, and every Republican said no, to hell with the veterans? How does that make you feel?
I don't think that that's what they said.
No, that's exactly what they said.
No,
it's exactly what they said, Richard. No. I mean, if they won't fund the Veterans Affairs Department. See, this is, I think what I got here is a guy who is so Republican that he will continue to vote for people who piss on him, who stand up, unzip their fly, and urinate all over him because he's a disabled veteran. And you know, Richard will continue to vote Republican. That's why he won't give me an answer.
Well, I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? Man, never stops, does it? Paul is in Irvine, California. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Mike, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're a little tinny, but I can hear you.
All right. Well, I wanted to say that that I'm very, very disappointed today. The White House and the U.S. Senate has gift-wrapped us to the private insurance industry. We need a third-party progressive party, and we need that the Democrats need to fall for this really infamous kind of day.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just stating my own thing here, but I will never for the rest of my life vote Democrat again. I've had enough. I've been busting my ass for the Democratic Party for 40 years, and today's decision tore it. That's it. I'm out of here.
I should hope that we can still hope for Sanders and some of the progressives in the House to keep this bill from passing, because I don't want to be band-aided to give more money to the insurance companies who are just going to give more money to the politicians, which is what's going to happen if this bill passes, I think.
Well, I think so, too. There's two winners here. The filthy, cowardly Democrats who will now continue along with their Republican brethren. They'll continue to get lots of money from these industries that they support and who support them while the American public gets screwed. What was the second thing? Hell, I completely forgot it. The first thing is probably the second thing. They'll continue to get money from the pharmaceutical industrial complex. And they'll go back home during the Christmas break and whine and bitch and lie to their constituents, the Democrats will, and say it's all the Republicans' fault, which in this case it's not. Republicans are bastards and don't deserve to live, but the Democrats can no longer pin any of this on the Republicans. Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in, Jeremy. Take care, okay? Or not Jeremy. Who was that? Oh, well, I forgot already. I'm sorry. We'll be back. Paul, was it Paul? Thanks, Paul. We'll be back after the break. Quick Uncle Mike Story Corner and back to your phone calls. Stay with us.
Woke up with a heavy head and I thought about leaving town. I could have died if I wanted to, slipped over the edge and drowned. But oh no, babe, I won't give up that easy.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. All right, before we go back to your phone calls, it is time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. It's a cold, foggy night here in the foothills of North Georgia Mountains. You can't see your hand in front of your face. It is so foggy. Good time to gather around the campfire here and snuggle up and enjoy another Uncle Mike Story Corner. This one comes from Ed O'Neill, who writes about your December 18th, 2008 broadcast. That's the title of it, a year ago. Dear Mike Malloy, you and I have an anniversary of sorts. It was a year ago, come December 18th, when I heard your broadcast about the plight of some members of a family stranded outside Madison, Wisconsin. The pathos of the story was so familiar to what we are accustomed to hearing and reading about during the Christmas season. Husband out of work, no money, no car, just an ordinary Joe trying to get home to his family for Christmas and finds himself stuck in a strange town in a snowstorm. I could have been all cynical about it. I remember thinking, so what, pal? There's depression going on, and it ain't no Hallmark TV special about the Waltons' homecoming. Stories like this happens every day of the year, and no one cares to know. More importantly, simply, no one cares. My situation was similar, though not as severe. I was listening to you telling the story from a cheap hotel in Hillsboro, Oregon, listening on 620 KPOJ out of Portland. Listening to you that night, I knew only two things. I had one day left at my job. For the last 6 years, I'd been a journeyman on the road, away from my family, in an ever further cast of job searches. The 3 years before that, the recession of 2001, I went without any work. In all those years, my children had grown up without a father present. That bit of theft was old and done. My wife was grateful that I had an extra month of work and knew I was lucky to have it. The others in my work group had been laid off a month earlier. And I knew then, given the way things were, that it would be a long time before I worked again. I have not worked since. The second thing I knew was that for the first time it would be a Christmas without Dad. A Pacific storm was coming in, would paralyze Oregon for a week. I was 1,800 miles from home and there was nothing There was nothing for me to do but hunker down and wait it out. So, no Christmas for me. But that was okay, too. My family was already grown and could understand how things stood. I knew from a lifetime of Wisconsin winters that I would have it easy compared to that man in Madison. Winter storms can kill people where he was. The man had a young family who may not have understood, but were going to grow a little older, a little sooner for it. Why I continued to listen that night was this. You mentioned the truck stop where he was, the TA truck stop off Interstate 94 and Highway 51. Of all the truck stops I have been in across the country, that one alone holds a personal memory for me. I had arrived at that truck stop on a pleasant autumn afternoon. It was move-in day at University of Wisconsin-Madison, and my daughter was starting college there. I was driving a pickup with all her furniture and luggage in it, hoping to rendezvous at TA with my wife, who was bringing the rest of the family and the family van. I remember the little details. My wife was late as usual. I was annoyed. The day, under a clear sky, had turned warm. There was the bee buzz of road traffic and semis coming and going. My daughter was flushed with nervousness, her eyes flashing as she saw a new and wonderful adventure unfold. All of this doesn't add up to much in a man's life, but it is a sum he carries around. It was a day he could see that had so much potential and promise of better things to come. That was 10 years ago. I could subtract these last 10 and still have change. You mentioned on your next night's broadcast that a trucker had heard you the day before. You mentioned that he gave that family a lift. I do not know what happened next. That was the last broadcast I heard of your show. Where I am in Wisconsin, there are no stations that carry you, and that's regrettable. I don't believe in miracles, and these days don't see much Christmas joy. But I do believe that sometimes people do the right thing, free and clear, to other people. Keep it lit, Mike. Do you still say that? Ed O'Neill. Another Uncle Mike Story Corner. A too hanky Uncle Mike Story Corner. That was very sweet. Thanks to Ed O'Neill for taking the time to write that. Okay, back to the real world. I got an email here from Rob in Texas. Who writes, Mike, I'm a diabetic. Up until January this year, I had insurance. I was laid off, and now I have nothing. Even then, though, my premium just for me was over $100 a month. Maybe I missed it, but I've not heard anyone address how much this fine will be for not having insurance, nor how they intend to keep premiums somewhat affordable. Well, that's right. They're not saying any of that. Having a pre-existing condition, I'm sure the insurance companies are salivating when they see me and others like me coming. The joke of a health reform bill amounts to nothing more than giving the insurance industry the green light to bend us over the same way they gave the auto industry. I may just have to take the fine. It will probably be cheaper. Rob in Texas. Yeah, I don't know how that's going to work either, Rob. I don't know what this the punitive side of this so-called health insurance reform is going to be. But all I have to say is, surprisingly, I'm not surprised. I mean, I had hopes that this thing was actually going to work. That this time there were enough Democrats in control and enough leadership and a president and yada, yada, yada. Oh, my God. Well, I'm sure that Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and the rest of these swine, these multimillionaire swine on right-wing talk radio and talk television, are high-fiving each other, having a great grand party, because they will tell each other that they're the ones who sunk this whole idea with their teabag parties and all the rest of this stuff. And for you Republicans out there, by the way, you know, once again, for you Republicans out there, you men who are going to discover that when you get up in the morning, that little cough you've had, all of a sudden you're spitting up a little bit of pink-tinged phlegm mucus because you just couldn't quit smoking, right? And your wives who are just going to notice all of a sudden there seems to be a little bit of pain every time she has a period. There's a pain that is not like regular period pain. I mean, you're gonna deal with this because, believe it or not, you Republicans, you are still subject to some of the human conditions that normal people are subject to. And you're gonna feel this and you're gonna notice this. And, what's going to happen is all of a sudden you're gonna realize that the people you've been voting for have cut your goddamn throat and are laughing while you lie on the floor bleeding to death. And the irony? You'll vote for them again, won't you? Because they won't let the queers get married. And that's important to you, isn't it? Man. Jeremy's in Huntington Beach, California. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, I really appreciate your sentiment. You know, there's never been any social progress happen without society being on the brink of disaster and chaos. You know, they only listen to people that bring guns to Tea Party rallies. You know, what can I say? But I have to say that I'm not sure we should, hold the whole party responsible for the fact that five conservatives have taken over the Democratic Party from the inside, aside from calling the Republicans bluff and letting them filibuster and trying to smack them around a little bit, the conservative Democrats. And what else are they supposed to do?
I don't think it's just five Democrats, Jeremy. Let's start with Harry Reid and you work your way through all these committee chair people, chairmen, I guess they're all men, all the subcommittees. The Democratic Party is, a lot of us have been talking about this for years. We just never paid that close of attention to it. It was a rhetorical exercise. The Democrats are Republican light. I mean, it goes all the way back to Clinton. Anybody who was paying attention during the Clinton years understood perfectly what he was doing. He called it triangulation, where you box the Republicans in, hoist by their own petard, so to speak, but that was nonsense. What Clinton was a Republican. He would just had a good way of talking, and he is a Republican, would go out there and, get a little play with his girlfriend, and, but, Bill Clinton, that's what he was. He was just Republican, so, it's nothing new. Hey, I gotta leave her, Jeremy. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, we'll be right back. Somebody get Monica on the phone here. I want to talk to her. It's always the same, it's just a shame, that's all. I could say day, and you'd say night. Tell me it's black, when I know that it's white. Always the same, it's just a shame, and that's all. Goodness, 10 minutes before the end of the program. Hey, if you're listening online, stick around immediately after this program. White Rose Society will, if you're listening through their stream, White Rose Society's stream, Ben's stream, if you're listening via radio station, this is not the case, but if you're listening via the White Rose Society stream, immediately after our program, you can hear Bob Kincaid's program, Head On Radio. It's rebroadcast. He's on every night from, Kathy, 6 to 8, 6 to 9. And You'll hear a rebroadcast. Stick around for that. Head on radio. Head on radio. Duncan is in Redding, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Duncan.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for promoting the horn. Duncan Kay.
Yeah. He's one of my favorite people.
Mine, too.
You listen?
Every day.
Good.
Since I'm out working, I'm unemployed.
Well.
But let me say right out front, I'm a union member, mm-hmm. a veteran, and a lifelong Democrat.
Uh-huh. I was,
and I
too.
Hate Republicans.
Yeah, me too.
They always vote against veterans things.
How do you figure 28 Democrats voted with every Republican to kill, or attempted to kill, the Veterans Affairs bill? It got passed, but only because the other 212 or whatever Democrats voted in favor of it. But every single, I'm sure, you know, being a veteran, you must know people, you know, if you go to VFW or whatever, you know people who are veterans who are Republicans. How in the hell did they
bunches of them.
Yeah, how do they justify, voting Republican when Republicans always cut their throats? How did they do that, Duncan?
They've been indoctrinated. Those are the ones that we call lifers.
Yeah.
They stay in the military for 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, but when they get out and the Veterans Affairs money.
Mike. Huh. Mike, some of them are, have connections to the military industrial complex. They get out of the service. They go to work for Boeing, Lockheed.
Yeah, but what about the ones that don't? Just plain old rank and file. You know, in my day, there were PFCs. I guess now they're E1s, E2s, E3s.
Yeah, well, I was one of those persons that did 3 years, 11 months, and one day and got out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, during the Vietnam era, it was either go in the Air Force or get drafted.
Yeah, right.
So.
I just took the
route less traveled, I guess.
Well, good for you.
Route.
Yeah, well, good for you. Good for you. I just don't understand how any veteran can be a Republican. I don't get that. I never have, never will. It's nonsense. But that's not why you're really called, I don't think, is it?
No, I wanted to know if you heard about the gal here in Redding, California, the Redding Tea Party Patriots.
No, I haven't.
Did the,
mm-mm.
It was on... It was on some of the blog sites. She wanted to get all the schools to play the Christian Christmas carols.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard about that.
No, I haven't.
But it was on Think Progress, I think, and a few other sites. It was on Crooks and Liars. And
yeah. I'll check it out.
It was just some crazy stuff. I mean, it made the news. I mean, we made the news once before with the Reading Tea Party gang last summer with our congressman Wally Herger was on Keith Overman when he had a town hall meeting here and a guy stood up said he was a Tea Party terrorist.
Oh yeah, I remember.
And
that.
The guy and Wally said, "Well, you're a fine American."
Yeah, right. Oh my
God. I live in Crazyville.
Yeah, you do.
In Northern California.
Well, I live in Crazyville in Northern Georgia. I think it's all Crazyville. You know what I'm saying?
The gang in the chat room wanted me to give a shout out.
Well, shout it out.
In the Malloy chat.
Yeah, I wish.
Every night we're in there. We talk about the subjects. We all listen to you, and we all love you.
Yeah, I wish I could. I wish that I could multitask, Duncan. I swear to God. I know when what's his name? Sam Cedar, my good friend Sam, when he was on Air America, he used to blog and do the show at the same time. Of course, he had Janine as his partner, but I just, every time I try to do that, I just get all confused. Kathy starts looking at me through the glass here like, are you going to do the radio program or are you going to go in the chat room? So I'm just not that slick. You know what I'm saying? But tell him I said, hey.
Pay attention to the boss.
I know. You got that right. Hey, tell him I said, hey, and I really appreciate the fact that they're in there.
They're all listening.
Oh, okay. Hey, everybody in the chat room. I'm sorry. I'm a crappy-ass program host that doesn't tend to business. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Beat me. Kick me. But anyway, I'm glad they're there. Hey, Duncan, I got a boogie.
All
right, man. Thanks a lot, Duncan. Take care, okay?
Okay. Okay.
All right, sir. Yeah, I should do that. I should get in that chat room, and I just can't do it. The live, you know, I want to say live blogging. That's not what it is, though. It's chatting. Chatting. That's such a a fey word, isn't it? Chatting. Let us have tea and some marijuana and chat. Is it time to go? Pull the plug on this program, will ya? I've just about had enough. 2 hours of Lieberman. Jesus Christ, I have to take a shower now for the second time today. Hey, I'll see you tomorrow night. All right, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
When did your life start?